from a list management and a TPP perspective.
You know, a key forward is something that would really add to our current playing stock of elite young talent.
We really made sure that the best interests of the club were at heart.
Take a good look at this steak knife. It's a nice sharp blade of serrated stainless steel.
Hello and welcome to the third Steak Knives podcast. Today I am here joined by, yet again, analyst Nick Welch. How are you doing, Nico?
Not too bad, Caelan.
That's good. Now, we'll quickly move on into the first segment because there are a lot of pieces of news that we need to get through in terms of contracts, trade rumours, that sort of stuff, even a few retirements that we'll quickly discuss. Jake Rimea from the Gold Coast Suns, he's rumoured to be wanting to leave the club. It's not surprising, really, is it?
Well, I mean, Gold Coast hasn't really progressed in the last couple of years, but what I found interesting was Rodney Ead's comments about how he wanted two top pick, 10 picks for Omira. I mean, for a bloke who hasn't played for 2 years, that's quite a lot. Mm. But at the same time, I think a lot of people are quickly forgetting how good his form was for a first and second year player. I mean, there's not many players in the last 10 or 15 years, midfielders, that played as well as he did in their first 2 years of his career. So if he can get fit, he definitely is worth two top 10 picks if he can return to that level.
Yeah, and he's definitely one of the most AFL's most complete midfielders when fit.
Fit, you know, inside, outside, skill, physicality, everything. Complete package, definitely, yeah.
Next one is Jaden Laverty. Now, he's been in and out of the Dons team in the last few weeks or throughout the whole season, really, and he's been rumoured to be on a few clubs' radars. He's a sort of, if you think back to when Jeremy Howe played for the Ds, he sort of plays that sort
of
role.
Definitely.
That sort of role. But do you think he'd probably be better suited at another club?
Well, he's just out of contract, so it might just be his manager just trying to drive up his price. I doubt he would leave Essendon after 2 years. Not many players leave clubs after 2 years. But what's interesting about him is how he's very much a modern footballer. 190-ish centimetres, you know, versatile, athletic, you know, plays half forward, midfield, up, you know, bit of a utility type, so he could be a very good player in the long run for Essendon.
Mm. Another one here is one of the Roos players that's sort of on the fringe, Edvicus Willis. He was a high draft pick in the 2014 draft. Unfortunately, he's had a few injuries, but he signed on for another 2 years at the Roos, and I think that's a real show of faith by the Roos team.
Well, they rate him very highly internally North as a versatile defender who can lock down on both tools and smalls. And they've pigeonholed him as a long-term Michael Ferreira replacement. But at the same time, so they've signed him for 2 years, but at the same time, he's yet to play a game. I mean, who knows how good he's going to be at AFL level. So they've put a lot of confidence in him.
Yeah, but I think the fact that he was a high draft
pick. Yeah, and one of the first pure defenders drafted in that draft that he was drafted in the year that he was drafted. Yeah.
Yeah. Another one here, Gary Rowan. Now, last night he re-signed for the Swans for another 3 years, but before that, he had been rumoured to be wanting to leave the club for Geelong, possibly.
Because he's from Geelong, yeah.
He's from Geelong. But now he has re-signed, and I think it's probably a good thing for the Swans because heading into the finals, they probably need him on his best game, like in his best form, and, you know, he can add a real X factor when he's on form.
I mean, it's a great signing for him, especially because he would have been very close to leaving. He actually admitted it when not many players do, after he signed, saying he was very close to looking at moving to a Victorian team. I mean, we know that terrible injuries he's had, you know, broken leg and all that. So he's still very much an X-factor player, you know, with his raw pace and overhead marking ability.
Yeah.
Very, very versatile. So he's youth act going forward that could be a very important player for the Swans.
I really do think he'd be an integral part of their team heading forward with a lot of their older players coming into the wrong side of 30. Another one here is Dion Prestia. Major club officials have announced he probably leave the club, and it was announced on the Footy Show last night by Damien Barrett that he has chosen Richmond as his club of preference. It's not really that surprising
up until this point of time, it was rumoured that Richmond were the most likely to trade for him. And I just find it surprising that he's announced it before the season's over. Now what will have to happen is the trade negotiations. I mean, he's probably worth a first-round pick at the very least.
Yeah.
But is there going to be a pick in return? Are they going to get another player from Gold Coast?
Could Richmond use another player to trade to Gold Coast?
So it's going to be very interesting negotiations, which I'm sure we'll cover in detail over the next podcast, over the next coming months.
Mm, for sure. Now, we've got a couple of players here, Matthew Boyd and Brent Harvey, who have both got ongoing talks to extend their contract for one more year. If I'm honest, I can probably see them both re-signing because Harvey, you know, he doesn't look like he's slowing down.
Yeah,
he's had a dip in form recently, but he's you know, that's not really going to change too much. And Boyd has been a massive part of the Bulldogs' defence in the last two seasons, and he's really grown into that rebounding halfback.
I'm positive the Dogs will want to keep Boyd. It's just a matter of whether he wants to retire or not, and whether or not there's formalities of the negotiations. I mean, Boyd has been an excellent player for 2 years, and the Dogs have probably paid him next to nothing. At the end of 2014, he was probably on his way down until that new revitalised role in defence. With Brent Harvey and North, it's not going to be Brent Harvey's decision. It's on North to decide whether to keep him or not. I mean, Harvey's doesn't look like he says he wants to retire, so it's just a matter of whether... Because of his age, as soon as he falls on the fringes of the best 22, there's no use in keeping him because of his age. He has to be cemented in the best 18 to 22 players.
If he wants to keep playing.
So I think his form in the next 2 weeks and his finals is going to be a key barometer. But like you said, he's most likely that he'll stay.
Yeah. Now we've got another three players here who all announced their retirements this week. There is another one which I'll get onto, but we don't have it here at the moment. Trent West, Daniel Merritt and Adam Cooney all announced their retirements during the week. Adam Cooney, along with that other player I just said that I didn't have down, but it is Matthew Stokes.
Yeah.
They will both play their final game against the Dogs this week. Cooney will play his 250th and Stokes his 200th. Works out pretty well. Trent West has only played, 78-odd games for Brisbane and Geelong. He also managed to get himself a flag in 2011. Yeah. Don't ask me how, I don't know. But, he's had a decent delivery. He's just... And that Daniel Merritt, he's been a... to say he's a cult figure at the Brisbane
Lions. Yeah, definitely a cult figure.
So he'll definitely be sorely missed.
Cooney could have had a Hall of Fame career if he didn't get injured in the final series of the year that he won the Brownlow at 23 years old. But at the same time, he still has gotten himself to 250 games, which a very select group of players in history have managed.
Very good.
Trent West, he was unlucky. He did an ACL up in Brisbane, I think in his first year up there. So he could have forged a solid career.
He's been a bit unlucky.
At Brisbane, forged a role there, and he's been a bit unlucky. And Merritt's probably been on the decline for a few years now, so it's not entirely unexpected that he's retired. And Matthew Stokes, he's probably going to retire anyway until Essendon called him for a top-up. So, again, that's not unexpected. He's another premiership player. So, it's great. For all the negatives of the Essendon saga, on the flip side, it's great that we've been able to see some of these premiership heroes.
Have another year,
like him and James Kelly and so forth. Mm.
It's been good to see because, they provide, they can be really good players.
They can provide
crucial parts of the game.
And give some experience that they wouldn't have otherwise had, some premiership experience to some of the young players that Essendon still have. So some advantages in a very, very, otherwise a very dire situation for him.
Yeah. Another one here, we'll move on to Brad Crouch. He signed on for a few more years following his breakout year.
Last year, he sort of started the season for such a highly rated player, taking the mini draft and all that. He had a very patchy start to the year, especially compared to last year with his form. But his last month, definitely has been much improved, much like his form early in his career. I don't think he was ever going to leave, even though there was... rumours of
a possible move to a Melbourne club.
Yeah, and with his brother there, keeping them together, and especially with his brother's Matt Crouch's great form, that's two of their midfield.
That's two midfield spots sorted,
especially with Scott Thompson
moving on,
getting on in age a bit,
and the loss of Dangerfield last season.
Yeah, so that's the two Crouch brothers are going to be their midfield duo, along with Sloan for years to come.
Mm. Talking about brothers, we've got another couple of brothers here in Tom and Oscar McDonald from the Ds, who have both signed a contract extension each. Oscar's definitely had one of the big, he's definitely had a really good breakout year this year, cementing his spot in that Melbourne back six. And Tom McDonald, he's a key to that defence. He is absolutely crucial, and I think the Ds have done really well with both of those.
With Tom McDonald re-signing, we discussed it in a previous podcast.
Week one,
where we said most likely re-sign. That's a great re-signing because he's going to be one of the better key defenders heading into the future. And his brother was a Rising Star nomination. Last week. And he was one of the best key defenders at TAC Cup. I think he might have won a Coach's Award or the Morris. No, I don't think. I'm not sure if it was the Morris. But he won an award at the under-18 level with his great form there. So I mean, they could be a key defensive brother duo for Melbourne heading forward.
Mm. Another one here is Kane Turner. Now, earlier in the year, he got caught for drink driving and he was suspended for 4 weeks. But the Roos have shown some faith in him and in his future, and they've agreed to a new contract. And he had, and like excluding that drink driving charge, he has been in and out of the team through injuries and bad form. But I think he can, you know, if with this contract and, you know, this year out of the way, I reckon he can, into the future, he can really build himself a legacy in that North Melbourne 22.
Well, he's key to North Melbourne, not only because, you know, we all know about their age list profile and their old list. So keeping some of their youth is critical.
Yeah.
At the same time, his style of play is very much part of the North DNA. High intensity, high pressure defensive tackling around the ball. So I reckon he'll cement himself in the 22, and it's a very, very solid re-signing.
Mm. A couple of Richmond re-signings here. Four. Sam Lloyd, Sean Hampson, Oleg Markov and David Asprey all signed contract extensions. Lloyd and Hampson have had pretty good seasons, if I'm honest. Hampson's really cemented that ruck spot ahead of Ivan Marić, who's had a very disappointing year.
Justifying the trade that they made, which some people thought was overs a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Sam Lloyd, you know, he kicked that goal against Sydney. But apart from that, he's been a very solid mid-sized forward who can just break out.
Pushing up the ground as well.
Yeah, exactly. Oleg Markov's really had a breakout year despite only playing a handful of games. And Asprey, he was rumoured to be leaving for Brisbane at the end of last season.
Oh, they offered him a big deal. Even
they offered a massive deal. But
he signed for 3 years, Asprey, and I think that's quite a big deal for a player who's probably a fringe type. I mean, not many players get 3 years, guaranteed years, if they're a fringe type player.
And I think,
But they'll probably sign him for 3 years, not paying very much. That guarantee of the third year means that the hit against the salary cap every given year is a bit less than it otherwise would have been with a 1 or 2 year deal. Also on Markov, I mean, Lloyd and Markov are definite best 22s heading into next year. And Dima Hardwick just came out and said that they reckon they can make finals and be a contender again next year. So if that's their intent, we're not here to discuss whether that's a good, the merits of that, that point. But if that is their intent, players like Markov and Lloyd are critical to their 22. So to make sure that they're not playing for their contracts next year means that that's definitely a good re-sign.
Yeah, and just quickly on Asprey, I really think that with the retirement of Chaplin and, you know, he sort of dipped in form in the last few weeks before retiring, I really think...
And Dylan Grimes' injury.
I really think that he's actually been really good in a team that's been rather lacklustre this season, so I think that's a good re-signing by the Tigs.
Yeah.
Rory Lobb from GWS. Now, he's rumoured to be wanted by WA clubs, and there were rumours that he might want to leave as well. I really don't think that the Giants can afford him to leave because he's a really important part of their team now, despite only being picked up in the draft as opposed to
and not one of their early picks.
Yeah, he came in the second or third round.
Something like that. I thought in the pick in the '20s actually might have been, but he's one of the best young dual ruck forwards, and he's very mobile for his height. You know, in the mid 200 centimeters. Taking some really impressive contested marks, kick a couple of bags. So he's been important for the structure to take a load off Mumford.
Yeah.
You look at how they signed Dawson Simpson this year as a backup ruckman in case Mumford's workload became too big, and they haven't had to play him because Lobb's taken some of the...
He's taken some of the workload off of Mumford.
Mumford, definitely, yeah. So what that means for how they play a second ruck and where they can find a second ruck if Lobb leaves is very, very critical. I mean, we all know how difficult it can be to find a second ruck.
Yeah, and should he move just briefly, I think Freo would probably be the best fit just because Freo probably are in the best position to make a trade, and I think, you know, with their lack of big, you know, quality talls, I really think that should he move, that Freo would be the best fit for him.
Definitely, definitely.
Because he could cement his spot in that first team. We'll move on to segment two now. We are going to do a quick player analysis on Hayden Ballantyne. Now,
been in the news?
He has been in the news a lot. He apparently was rumoured that he wanted to move to West Coast.
His manager came out and said something about it. Yeah.
And in this, like, throughout this week, he's come out and said, like, there's no sort of, you know, rift between players. I really think that him, I love playing with five.
Yeah,
Mundy came out and also diminished the rumours that Ballantyne wanted to leave, that was a rift and that sort of stuff. It's been confusing because it was gone, he wants to leave, he wants to stay, he wants to leave. It's sort of been up and down. But I think when he's on his form, when he's in his best form,
one of the better,
and when he's niggling players like he did Matthew Scarlett a few years back, I really think that he can be a big, like an important part of that, you know, Frio forward line. And with the lack of tall, small forward, like small forward,
him and Walters quality, working together. Him and Walters.
And I think, I really do think that at 29, should he move to another club,
you know, short-term fix.
He could definitely be a short-term fix for someone, for a club who may be coming towards the end of its premiership window.
Well,
just someone coming into the premiership window like GWS, but they already have the Steve Johnson.
Well, GWS are definitely in the small market, the market for a small forward, sorry. And they've made that well known. Their list manager has come out and said that publicly. So GWS could be an option, maybe part of the Cam McCarthy trade involvement. And the Eagles could certainly use a small forward as well. I mean, we know Mark Lacroix's form's dipped a bit this year.
And he's getting on a bit.
However, he'll need to find his form of years by, because he's been quite average. But who knows whether that's just because the team as a whole's been playing worse and he's stuck in the forward line. But just on the point that he's come out and said he wants to move to the Eagles and there's talk about him leaving, we're seeing that more and more this year about players mid-season talking about leaving, you know, making comments about how much they want to get paid and move elsewhere. And when we saw it with Lin Jong earlier in the year about him being reported him touring another club's facility. So
yeah,
this is just another example of more and more media coverage, more and more examples of players discussing moving clubs partway through the year, like we see in rugby league and so forth. So
yeah, and I mean, just quickly, just when you compare that to the European soccer
yeah,
it is massively different. Like, You see club coaches coming out in the AFL, and you know Nathan Buckley about Michael Hurley earlier in the week. He came out and said, "Oh, you know, we're interested. I reckon we could probably."
But it's all hush hush. Though it's all vague statements. Like, we're interested. It's uncommon that you see definitive information like it being reported that Ballantyne wants to leave. Not media sources saying, "Oh, I've heard from sources," or "it's rumoured," but managers getting involved, you know, commenting in the media, definitive reports, and now we're seeing it with Prestia as well. I think it's just what's happening in these days. I mean, with more money coming out next year with the increased salary cap, and, you know, the negotiations, the players wanting more money, even more for the CBA. And some people would say it takes away from the purity of the game, the brotherhood of sticking with your club, but we've just got to accept that that's what money does to the AFL these days.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's a good example of what's happened in European soccer. Like, it's become more of a business than a sport now. I mean,
yeah,
like, I think I mentioned Paul Pogba last week, but you got other moves for, you know, centre-backs that are going to cost them £30 million.
Yeah, like, not that the money that floats around, I mean, some of is the same. Some of these transfer fees are double the entire revenue of any given AFL club. Triple the revenue of any given AFL club.
David Luiz moved to PSG for £50 million last year.
But that just shows you that some very strange decisions can be made when that much money is floating around. And we're definitely trending in that direction. European soccer, American football, basketball, baseball, that sort of thing. So, and a lot of people would say it's the culture of the game is being pulled apart, but that's just the way it's trending. There's not much we can do about
that's
it.
That's just the way the game's going. But just quickly on Hayden Ballantyne, just to conclude, do you see him leaving?
Well, I think Freo could very well just give him a push, even if Ballantyne, the rumours aren't true that Ballantyne wants to leave, because they need to retool their list, definitely. Freo, I mean, yeah. I have a lot of people criticise Ross Lyon's coaching, and I don't agree with them necessarily. I think he's had a lot of success with very weak lists over the years, both at Freo and St Kilda. So I think Ross Lyon is definitely there to take them into finals over the next year or two. But they definitely need to retool their list, and some of their older role players, or players who are on the decline, like Chris Mayne's a free agent and Ballantyne and that. They need to rejig, and with Pavlich retiring, especially in that forward line, they need to rejig and look to recruit, bring in players. Cam McCarthy could be one of them, but Rory Lobb, like we discussed. Once they can get maybe three or four new forwards in that forward line, that could be the driving force to get them back into finals.
And it could be a very quick rebuild. Should their off season be very busy and very
busy? Yeah, which could be one of the busiest for any team at all.
I reckon this off season is probably going to be the busiest off season that we've had in recent memory. And I think that trend is going to continue in terms of, you know, each offseason is just going to become as crucial as the next one.
Definitely. Yeah. So, and just moving on to Freo as a whole, what do you think, Calum, about what they should do for next year?
I really do think that they should rebuild. You know, whether it's a quick rebuild or whether it's a steady rebuild, I really do think that they should...
They've I mean, not that they entered the season this year aiming to rebuild, but they definitely have done so this year. I mean, Ross Lyon's played more young players this season than he has in any given season in his coaching career. I mean, you look at his time at St Kilda, and David Armitage and Jack Stephen, who've come on a lot since Ross Lyon left, hardly played a game in the first 3 to 4 years under Ross Lyon. They were VFL players, and then they've come on afterwards. So all these pundits, these media analysts saying that, oh, Ross Lyon can't play kids and all that, I think they're not entirely correct, because he's never had to play kids. Every year he's been a coach, he's aimed for the flag. He's not looking to develop players 1 year for the year.
He's not the sort of coach that you hire especially for a rebuilding team.
Especially for his coaching style, which I think is very convoluted. It's very difficult. It's very complex in its defensive mechanisms, which I don't think young players lend themselves to being involved in that coaching style very well. A lot of older role players who communicate, I mean, Zach Dawson's a perfect example, who communicate well with Ross Lyon's coaching style, understand that coaching style very well. But this year we've seen, you know, a lot of players come on, like, you know, Connor Blakey, Lockie Weller, two of their long-term midfield hopes.
And a lot of players in what has been a very disappointing season for them, a lot of players have come in and they've performed not just admirably, but they've been able to, you know, get themselves a spot in that first game too.
Definitely.
And I've just got a list here. You've got guys like Connor Blakely, you've got Darcy Tucker, Tommy Sheridan, who's developed into a really good forward tagger, or just a tagger in general.
Yeah, definitely.
Sam Collins, who was a VFL...
He's a young, mature age recruit. So he's still got a lot of improvement left in him.
From the VFL. Matt Tabner, I reckon he can lead their forward line in years to come. With Cam McCarthy, should they get him?
Yeah,
I
mean, it could be a very...
That his scope for growth is really... It's really high. Michael Apnis, he's very raw at the moment, but, you know, he's been rather impressive in his first few games, I reckon.
Yeah.
He can, you know...
We're big fans of Michael Apnis here at the podcast.
Lockie Weller, as you mentioned, he's definitely... You know, he hasn't missed a game, I think.
And he can play both through the midfield and up forward, so he's got that...
Sort of like his brother, yeah.
Yeah, so he's got that versatility aspect to him, definitely. Yeah.
Shane Yaron, he's only played a few games, but, you know, he's already shown glimpses that he could be...
He could be a very good player
for them. Like, you know, he's 26 when you think about it. He could just slot right into that Valentine role should he leave. Ed Langdon, who's sort of been in and out, but, you know,
he's a sort of a little bit older, but he's got a bit of athleticism to him, and he's found a role in a bit of a versatile role for him.
Yeah, I reckon he could probably get himself on a half forward flank if he.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and another one is Ethan Hughes, who's been set relatively decent at half back. So they do have a bunch of fringe and young players who are coming through the system really.
And the thing is, a lot of these players in their very first games or their very first time in the team, you know, their first handful of games, they're not going to make an instant impact. They need time to develop. So everyone says, oh, you know, Fremantle are going to have a poor year this year. Well, it's because they're still in the mindset that Fremantle are pushing for the flag this year. But we need to chalk this up as a year of development. So next year is going to be their second year and not their first year. So when a lot of these young players, you know, reach 20, 30, 40, 50 games and they keep improving, they keep contributing, they're going to be the centrepiece for a rise up the ladder. I mean, and there's a lot of young talent here, very good young talent. The question mark is how good Ross Lyon is at integrating these players. But there's no doubt that they have the talent on their list. On top of the fact that they're going to have another top three pick this year, whether it's Petrescu Seton
or Tim English.
Or Tim English, two Western Australian lads who can help them going forward. And another player, Brad Hill, who's interested in returning back home.
I really don't think he's worth a first round pick though. I reckon in terms of, you know, making trades and, you know, their draft picks, I really think that whilst they should be very active and very prepared to make trades, I really do think they should not, under any circumstance, part way with it. I think
Brad Hill's an interesting one, because he's very much pigeonholed into his playing a specific role. I mean, he's got the lowest contested ball winning rate of a lot of the league's top ball winners.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he plays his role very, very well. He's a very good kick inside 50, hits targets. He runs down and gets into space very well. So if Fremantle are a bit more aggressive running the ball out of half back in there, he can position himself well, maybe in together with his brother on opposite wings. He could help their ball movement a lot heading forward. It's just a matter of how much he's in contract. It's a matter of how much they pay for him. A first round pick and probably an early second round pick, it's probably too much for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And just recently, we just discussed the young players. We'll move on to some of the more experienced players. And I'll list them and then I'll get your opinion very briefly on whether they should move on or whether you think they could have a role in, a young team. So, Zach Clark.
Oh, he's a free agent and he's still pretty young, but... And they said that they wanted to keep him, but I can see another club getting enticed by his athleticism and offering more money than Freo are willing to pay, plus a compensation pick's involved if he leaves as well.
Yeah. Chris Mayne?
He's a free agent as well, and I think another club will offer him more money. He's getting on in age a bit and opens up a bit of salary cap room for them to chase all of these other players.
Yep. Nick Subin?
He's played a lot of games, playing some very, very average footy. I think he's a Ross Lyon favourite.
He's played like 150-something games.
I'm surprised he's got so much interest from other clubs. Mm-hmm. I don't really rate him that much as a player. I mean, I can't see Fremantle keeping him if a Melbourne club surprisingly offers him more money than he's worth when his market value. Yeah. So there's a fair chance he might leave as well.
Daniel Pearce.
He's probably going to make a room for as well. I mean, when you think of these list cleanouts, I mean, they've still got a lot of players out of contract. You know, these players that they have to move on, you know, to open up list spots for younger talent, whether it's through trade or draft. These are the type of players that probably leave.
Yeah. Just a few more here. We got Matt DeBoer.
He's gone, and I don't think he'll have much interest from other clubs.
Yeah, you reckon they could just delist him?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised. Tende Mzungu, hopefully I pronounced that right.
Yeah, I think he's the same for that, yep.
Yep. Clancy Pearce.
Also, probably a third one who could get delisted, or another club we're picking up cheaply as a delisted free agent.
These are probably the two most, interesting ones. Anthony Morabito.
He's just got so much raw talent, so they'll probably just stick with him. And as time goes on, they don't have to pay him as much money in terms of a hit against the salary cap. So they'll probably stick with him.
And last one, Michael Barlow.
He's going to have some interest. He's the type of player that if Freo do a complete rebuild, they try to dump as much salary as they can to open up salary cap space and get draft picks, that he'll get leaked. He'll leak. So it's clear that list managers from other clubs will be ringing up Freo and saying, hey, Freo, are you going to do a complete list rebuild? Do you want to dump older players like Barlow? But who says he'll be interested in leaving? They could probably keep him cheaper than elsewhere. So I doubt that he'll leave.
Yeah. All right. And I really think that covers just about all of it.
So, I think Freo are definitely going to be one of the most busiest teams in this offseason.
Which is, contradictory to what, you'd expect from Freo in an offseason. They're never very that active.
So. Active. So, I mean, we've listed just half a dozen players who could be off the list. There's quite a few players that could trade. So they could very well take four or five picks to the draft on top of trading in or gaining free agents of three or four players. So up to 10 or 12 new players on the list definitely could be a possibility next year.
Mm. All right, we'll move on to the final segment now. It is our National Women's League segment. And take it away, Nick, I reckon. I reckon you've got most of the info there.
Well, some news out west for Fremantle, continuing on the Fremantle theme. It was reported that Fremantle were running an academy to try and get talent both from football and non-football sources. And it was reported that Michelle Cowan, the coach and one of the, Melbourne's coach in the exhibition games and one of the most talented coaches in women's football going around, she said that there was about 12 of these athletes from other sports that they would interested in keeping testing. I mean, that's a massive amount. If a majority of these 12 players come on and they recruit them from other sports, that could give Fremantle a real edge.
Mm. We did mention rugby sevens last week.
Yeah, we did mention rugby sevens.
And that could definitely be one of the outlets they look at.
Well, that's the thing about the women's league. I mean, it offers as a professional league, I mean, we can debate that maybe they should be getting paid even more. But the fact is that it's an attraction for a lot of female athletes who would have grown up playing footy, and now it's a chance for them to play footy professionally. So now that they're recruiting a lot of these athletes from other sports, that just adds to the quality of the league. I mean, and if a lot of them are based in Perth, and we know that there's only the Freys are one team in Perth, AFL toyed with the idea of offering both clubs in Perth a contract.
Yeah.
So now that Fremantle has access to the entire talent of in the Western Australia as a state, which is one of the strongest footy states for women's football, on top of the fact that there's already a lot of talented Western Australian footy players recruiting athletes from other sports, that they could be they could definitely be the favourite for the competition over the summer.
Yeah, for sure. If they can get their list right and if they recruit the right players, I really do think that they could have a chance at, you know, pushing for those final spots.
However, a bit of sad news with one of their marquee players, Kira Bowers, tearing her ACL in a local game.
So that's no good. And just in reference to that, another marquee player also tore her ACL, but not from Freo. Thankfully for them.
But not thankfully for GWS. One of their marquee players,
Renee Forth,
who in the very same game in Western Australia tore ACL. And I think it's going to harm GWS in their list more than Fremantle's, because, you know, Fremantle's got access to the Western Australian talent.
And but GWS, I think GWS the New is South rather weak.
Yeah, the New South Wales, and they get access to Tasmania as well. Their talent is not quite as strong. So the fact that they have one of their two marquee players, you know, not playing at all this season, reduces their talent significantly. The AFL has come out and said that on top of the four priority picks that every club gets before the draft, each of these two clubs will get a fifth to replace them, but they're not in the 16 best women's players in the country. They're not up to the same talent. So a lot of disappointment, or it's not great news for GWS.
No, not at all. And just lastly, we'll just briefly mention Erin Phillips. Now, she's been to two Olympics.
This isn't news in the previous week, but it's been reported in previously. She was signed to Port if they had a license way back last year. But we just wanted to mention her because she's an example of a lot of these talents from other sport that could definitely make the move to women's footy.
Yeah, and she said that she would consider it, and that, you know, she would probably find inspiration in other athletes who have done the
same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that basically covers all of it, and we just finished off with the National Women's League. Hopefully you have enjoyed this week's podcast. You know, sorry if we sped it up a little bit. It was just, we had a lot of news pieces.
News this week.
Thank you for listening. Thank you, Nick, for being here again.
No worries.
All right, and you guys have a good one.
Definitely. See you next week.
See ya.